space travel in the hands of private citizens seems completely normal today. But 13 years ago, it was an adventure that existed only in science fiction and in the minds of dreamers. This week on Techonomics, guest host and award-winning journalist Julian Guthrie explores how space travel has evolved in the private sector, with one of the initial dreamers turned innovators.
I'm Julian Guthrie, filling in for Jason Middleton, who is on vacation. We are returning now to our conversation with Peter Diamandis. You're friends with Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Richard Branson. So where do you see the private space industry of today?
Yeah, we're on the cusp of some incredible progress. And for the first time ever, that incredible progress and that dream is coming not from governments, not from Russia or China or Japan or India or the United States. It's coming from private individuals. And the beautiful thing about private individuals funding space companies is that they are able and willing to do much more, much faster at perceivably higher risks because there's no government investigation that follows. There's no politics for their money. They can say, I'm going to fund this. It's $1 billion. Boom, you got it. So, you know, you've got Elon Musk, who has built an amazing company in SpaceX, the Falcon launch vehicle series, Falcon 9, soon Falcon Heavy, are amazing, right? He has done what was unheard of, which was build fully reusability into the Falcon 9 first stage, which will drop the cost precipitously. And then, you know, his vision is going to Mars, and I know Elon well. And when he says, I'm committed to going to Mars, and I have built this company to go to Mars, he is telling the truth. It's not a ruse. That is his purpose and his mission, and he will make it happen come hell or high water. And that's one of the reasons that SpaceX isn't public. He wants to be able to control it and really drive the company, the revenues, the vision to get humanity to Mars. And you've got Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin. I've known Jeff for 30 years, and I remember sitting in a cafe with him in Seattle in which he said, you know, the reason I'm building Amazon is to make enough money to open up space. You know, a simple two-part plan, become a multi-billionaire and then spend it on space. And he is, in fact, doing that.
And that was totally normal to you, of course, you know, the quintessential space geek, right?
Yeah. and so, you know, any dollar I make, I invest in space as well. But Jeff is, unlike Elon going to Mars, Jeff is interested in moving industry into space. And we'll see that in space colonies and space stations, perhaps on the moon, and really getting millions of people into free space. In other words, not going back into a gravity well. And then the company I'm running right now with two other amazing people, Chris Lewicki, who is the CEO. I serve as the co-founder and co-chairman. And my other co-chairman is Eric Anderson. And Planetary Resources is a company who's building deep space spacecraft. We'll launch on top of Elon and Jeff's rockets to go into deep space, to go to near-Earth asteroids, to prospect them, to go and find out what useful materials are on there, such as fuel, hydrogen and oxygen, such as building materials, nickel, iron, cobalt, and finally platinum group metals, platinum, palladium, iridium, osmium, and so forth. And these asteroids are like the Manhattan Islands. We'll use the resources on them to fuel our continued development in space. And so it's an exciting time to be alive.
Totally exciting and fascinating. Yeah. I remember when I first met you, you said that the mining of asteroids would also create the world's first trillionaires, you believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I believe that. We're going to create amazing wealth. These asteroids, if you look at them objectively, are trillion-dollar assets. Ultimately, I think we're going to create huge wealth, but we're also going to make sure that we aren't having all of our eggs in one basket. You know, the goal is to make humanity a multi-planetary species and to do it during our lifetime.
The XPRIZE was founded with, as Peter was describing, the Ansari XPRIZE, which was won in 2004. But the XPRIZE today uses incentive challenges to solve the world's biggest problems. Peter, tell us about a few of the XPRIZEs that are coming to fruition now, whether it's the Google Lunar XPRIZE or the Qualcomm Prize.
We've awarded and launched about $140 million of prizes. The first $10 million was really hard. It's gotten a little bit easier. Since then, we have another $200-300 million of prizes in various stages of development. And we focus on what the world's largest problems are or things that are stuck. And then we put up large cash prizes funded by billionaires, philanthropists, governments, and so forth. So, for example, we do have a $30 million space prize called the Google Lunar X Prize. Google put up $30 million of money. It's sort of the follow-on to the Ansari X Prize. And all you have to do is build a robot that you can land on the moon and move a half a kilometer and send photos and videos. One of my favorite examples of a great prize was after the BP oil spill occurred in 2010, James Cameron is one of our board members, a big oceanographer, environmentalist, obviously from Avatar and Titanic, and he said we got to do something about that. And so we created a very rapid prize to clean up oil spills. Could we increase the rate of oil spill cleanup so that you cleaned it up on the ocean before it hit the shoreline? Wendy Schmidt, the wife of Eric Schmidt, the executive chairman of Alphabet, funded that prize, and we increased the rate of oil spill cleanup 600%, a six-fold increase. We just awarded the $10 million Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize. Qualcomm put up $10 million of prize money, $10 million of operations dollars to build a device sort of out of the Star Trek universe, the device that Bones and Spock would use to diagnose a person. And the Tricorder Prize had 350 teams enter. We got down to five finalists and finally two finalists, and we announced our winner. And to win the prize, you had to build a piece of consumer-facing product. This is something that a mom or dad could use at 2 o'clock in the morning. When their kid was sick, they could diagnose 15 different diseases. We have prizes in water. We have prizes in women's safety. We have prizes in converting CO2 from a smokestack into useful products and materials. So it's exciting. People can learn more at xprize.org, xprize.org.
Last question. Best piece of advice or a phrase, a saying that you live by that you can give to our listeners?
So I actually came up with something that you know well called Peter's Laws. And again, on my website, diamandis.com, people can download them. But I'll give you a few of them. And I put down all the phrases in those, or 29, but just a couple. If something can go wrong, fix it. To hell with Murphy. You know, I'm sick and tired of hearing of Murphy's Laws.
I love that.
You know, when given a choice, take both. Do it by the book, but be the author. Start at the top and work your way up. And, you know, these are, you know, the best way to predict the future is create it yourself, one of my favorites. And we do that. We create the future we want when we are confident and bold and passionate and persistent. And so over the course of my life thus far, I've written down those sayings, those rules that have been true for me and I live by, and I wrote them as Peter's Laws instead of Murphy's Laws.
Peter, you're always an inspiration, so thank you for sharing that with us today, and it's great talking with you.
Well, you are one of my favorite people on the planet, Julian, and I'm grateful and always love speaking to you.
That was Peter Diamandis. You can follow him on Twitter at Peter Diamandis. You can also follow me, Julian Guthrie, at Julian Guthrie. Coming up next is Teresa Gao, one of those rare unicorns of Silicon Valley, a woman venture capitalist. This is Techonomics.